Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for joining us on another episode of Legally Dirty Blonde. Today, we're going to wrap up our discussions and our little mini-series of episodes where we've been talking about abortion rights in the United States. So far, we've gone through the historical Supreme Court decisions of Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey, and today, which happens to be the anniversary of the Supreme Court decision in Roe versus Wade, we're going to bring it current and we're going to talk about the case that is pending in the Supreme Court right now, which is Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health. And that case involves a 15-week pre-viability abortion ban in the state of Mississippi. And what we're going to do for the first part of this episode is we're going to go through the arguments on both sides. And we're going to discuss why or why not they are constitutional. But for the second half of this episode, things are going to get a little spicier, and I'm going to give you guys some of my personal opinions, and I think you'll enjoy that part. So if you've made it this far through this boring legal stuff, stick around. Things will get more exciting. But let's get into it, and here we go. All right, so let's talk about Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. And like I said, this is dealing with a Mississippi law that is attempting to place a 15-week prohibition on abortions, which basically, after 15 weeks, you're shit out of luck if you want an abortion, according to this law. And before we get into the specific arguments that are being made on both sides, I think we should do a quick procedural background just to discuss how this case even got to the Supreme Court. So this was in the district court first, and the district court held that this law violated the due process rights of women seeking pre-viability abortions in the state of Mississippi. It was then appealed up to the Fifth Circuit, which affirmed the district court's decision, holding that the Supreme Court's precedent categorically created a right to a pre-viability abortion. So, at this point, the lawyers for Dobbs filed a petition for cert. And what's a petition for cert? It's basically like, hey, Supreme Court, can I ask you one quick question? I have one question. I just need some clarity on this one issue. Do you have like 1 second? And basically the Supreme Court decides whether or not they're even going to address it or look at it. And in this case, they did. And the petition for cert was granted on May 17th, 2021. And the petition for cert was granted to address the question of whether all pre-viability prohibitions on elective abortions are unconstitutional. So it's at this point when oral argument before the Supreme Court is scheduled, and during the period between then and oral argument, both sides file their legal briefs with the court, who reviews them before oral argument, and then they have their oral argument. And in this case, oral argument took place on December 1st, 2021. And representing the petitioner, Thomas E. Dobbs, well, first of all, who the fuck is Thomas E. Dobbs? Thomas E. Dobbs is the state health officer of the Mississippi Department of Health. So just to be clear and to make things a little bit more easily understandable, Dobbs' side is basically the pro-life side of things here. The respondent in this case is Jackson Women's Health Organization, and that would be like the pro-choice side here. And on December 1st, 2021, oral argument took place, and representing Dobbs was Scott G. Stewart, and representing Jackson Women's Health was Julie Rickelman. And basically what happens during oral argument is both sides get a chance to really briefly summarize their argument. And when I say briefly, I mean fucking briefly, guys. It's less than 5 minutes. And then for about an hour, maybe a little more, maybe a little less, the Supreme Court justices fire questions at them and pummel them with questions. And Yeah, that's and it's definitely super fucking nerve-wracking. And I can only imagine that a lot of these lawyers, if you listen, you'll get flashbacks to the Socratic method that was used during law school. But I am a huge loser, and I listened to the entire 2.5 hour argument that was made for this case, and it was super interesting. And if you want to be a nerd like me, I'm going to link it in the show notes. You can listen yourself, and it's really interesting. And honestly, if you have an interest in any other Supreme Court cases, check out their website. You can listen to any of the oral arguments you'd like. And you, if you don't want to listen and you prefer reading, although if you're listening to this podcast, I'm going to assume you'd prefer to listen, you can even read the transcripts. And yeah, so that's an interesting fact to know. And it's an interesting resource for us U.S. citizens to have. So let's move on and let's talk about the arguments that were made. So the state of Mississippi is arguing a few things, but their main focus is that the court should entirely overrule and overturn Roe and Casey, which we know gave women the right to obtain pre-viability abortions. So they say they want this issue to be resolved by the people, aka the state. And they are also saying, listen, Supreme Court, if you're not going to completely overturn these precedent cases, then you should reject viability as a measuring tool, and you should also get rid of the undue burden standard from Casey, because they say that it's too subjective and it's too vague. So how are they making those arguments? Their main point is that the right to abortion is not explicit in our Constitution and isn't tethered to any part of our nation's history and traditions, and that this basically, they're saying that this means it should be overturned and returned to the states. They also say that because this is a political issue and they call it a hard issue, it should be reserved to be legislated by the people of each state and not by the Supreme Court of the United States. You know, they argue that the lower court struck down this law without even considering that there is undeniable human life at 15 weeks, and that there are surging risks to women that abortion poses. They say the courts below merely dismiss the case as unconstitutional because it restricts pre-viability abortions. And I mean, I'm just going to say this now before we even get into the real analysis. I mean, of course they did, because that's what Roe v. Wade and Casey say. I don't even understand why that's like not a point to be made. But regardless, they also say that their law has robust exceptions for women's health and life and gives ample time to obtain a legal abortion. So, like I said, they want the precedent cases of Roe and Casey completely overturned, and they want the issue of abortion returned to the states to deal with independently on their own. And they say that if you're not going to fully overturn it, you got to reject viability and you got to get rid of the undue burden standard. So that's the state of Mississippi's argument. What does Jackson Women's Health say? They say that the court should once again reaffirm the core holdings of Roe and Casey that protect a woman's right to choose to terminate her pregnancy without government interference pre-viability. The argument is that a ban 2 months prior to viability is per se unconstitutional based on decades of precedent, and they list three reasons why. One, they point to the stare decisis and how in Casey it represents an especially high bar, and it is explicitly stated in Casey. And Casey reaffirmed Roe's essential holding that it is a fundamental right for a woman to choose to have an abortion pre-viability. That's number one. Number two, they say that Roe and Casey were correct and therefore should not be overturned. They say that for a state to take control of women's bodies and force pregnancy and birth with all of the unique risks and complications that come along with pregnancy is a deprivation of a woman's liberty. And they put an emphasis on the viability line, which was confirmed by Casey as a logical line that balances the other interests at stake. And they're actually conceding that there are other interests, which, you know, they mean the state's interest in protecting the health of the mother and the life of the fetus. So, and their last point is that, and you know what, arguably this could be the most convincing point, that reducing the right to abortion will propel women backwards in society. They point out that a quarter of women today have had abortions for a multitude of reasons, and that if we're going to avoid profound damage to women's liberty and equality and the rule of law in the United States, the court has to affirm Roe and Casey. So let's just really summarize both sides quickly. So the state wants the court to be neutral on the issue of abortion. And by neutral, they mean overturning Roe and Casey. And by doing so, it wouldn't be the court saying, we agree with abortion, we don't agree with abortion. It would be the court saying, we're letting the states decide for themselves how to handle the issue. And this argument is grounded in the notion that the rights that are not explicit in the Constitution and traditions of our country are generally left to the people and states to legislate. And so that's Mississippi's side. Now, let's talk about the other side. They're basically saying that you should reaffirm Roe and Casey. That pre-viability, a state cannot infringe on a woman's right to control her life and her pregnancy. And they emphasize that to decide that any other way would have a profound impact on women's status in our society and in our country. So let's move on. And when we talked about Casey last episode, we discussed how much of that opinion was devoted entirely to the stare decisis analysis and whether or not precedent should be overturned. And I think, personally, that the stare decisis issue is likely going to be the determining factor in this current case. I'm not going to go through all of them in detail again like we did last episode, but the question is, like, what has changed and what has been affected by Roe and Casey? And just to go over a few, the state argues that Roe and Casey are just straight up wrong and that they have led to extreme negative consequences for 50 years in our country. And to be fair, the attorney never actually says what these extremely negative consequences are that he keeps bringing up. I'm assuming, though, that he means aborted fetuses, aborted babies. I'm not sure. I'm assuming. That's an assumption on my part. But the other side takes the position that Roe and Casey have produced extremely beneficial results, including the advancement of women in our society. So that was one part of that argument. There's also the reliance argument. And Jackson Women's Health Organization argues that for 50 years, people, and specifically women in our country, have relied on Roe and the right to an abortion to make important and critical decisions relating to their personal and familial lives. The state is arguing that there's been no reliance at all because abortion jurisprudence has been unsettled for many years in our country. Now, we learned from the court in Casey that opposition and what he is referring to as unsettled, but that opposition is it's just not going to cut it as a legitimate reason to overturn a case of that magnitude. So the last thing we'll talk about is, you know, the state says that Roe and Casey are just unworkable legal standards and specifically points to that undue burden standard that was created in Casey. They say that that undue burden standard is just too subjective and too vague, and it's an unfeasible legal standard that's been unable to be properly used and applied over the last 50 years. So the other side says, like, hold up a second, buddy. What are you saying this shit's unworkable? Unworkable? What do you mean? They're like, we've been working it for 50 years with Roe and 30 years with Casey. And more notably and importantly, they make an important distinction. So he's saying, okay, this undue burden standard is too vague and subjective. Now, the undue burden standard only applies when they're determining if a state regulation on abortion is unconstitutional or not. The undue burden standard doesn't even come into play when we're talking about a complete ban on abortion, which is what we are talking about here. So that's kind of an invalid argument on behalf of the state there. But those are just a couple of points to discuss in the stare decisis argument. But I do have to say that I don't think that the state side, Dobbs side on this, addressed any new arguments since Casey. The same exact arguments were made before the Casey court, and I don't think that their stare decisis analysis proved anything that wasn't already thoroughly analyzed and ultimately rejected in Casey. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But I do think that at the end of the day, this stare decisis argument and analysis is going to be the determining factor of this case before the Supreme Court right now. So Next, we're going to talk about the state's argument that this issue of abortion should be returned to the states because the right to an abortion is not explicitly stated in our Constitution and therefore should be left to the states to determine. And this is important, and we're gonna get into it. Now, in case you didn't know, the Constitution, in fact, does not specifically discuss the right to an abortion. I doubt that's surprising to anybody that's been following this or anybody with a brain. So, yeah, it's not a shock that our founding fathers didn't think to address abortion in the Constitution. Anyway, so the state here is arguing that because something's not explicit in the Constitution, it's something that should be reserved for the states to deal with. Now, let's talk about how the court in Roe reached that idea that abortion is a fundamental right. We know that the court found that this right to an abortion or right to choose was based in the right to privacy of in personal and familial relations like marriage and sexual autonomy. So the right to privacy we're talking about led the court to the 14th Amendment and the Due Process Clause that says, as we've said a million times, a state cannot infringe on fundamental rights of life, liberty, and property without due process. So the court found that this right to privacy is encompassed in the broad definition of liberty under the Due Process Clause, which in turn makes it a fundamental right that a state cannot deprive a person of. And again, like I just said, that includes the right to have an abortion, because that is a private familial issue and deals with a person's control of their reproductive life and future. So the argument by the state is that this is not explicit in the Constitution, and that's correct, but however, there's a lot of things that aren't explicit in our Constitution that we hold very dearly to us in this country. And, you know, it's not explicitly there, but the court found that it was implicitly there through their analysis, and this is important. And now, I don't deny that the way that the court got to their reasoning to make this a fundamental right was a bit convoluted in Roe. But that doesn't make the end result of finding this covered by the right of liberty any less accurate, even though it was a complicated way of getting there. So with that being said, let's move on and continue to talk about why this is even more important. And this is important because this idea that just because something isn't specifically written in the Constitution means that it should be something decided by the states, this would put at risk a lot of other rights that we have implicitly taken from the text of our Constitution. So let's just discuss two. First, let's talk about the case of Lawrence versus Texas, which was decided by the court in 2003. So this is post Roe and Casey. And it decided that it was unconstitutional to criminalize sodomy, basically meaning that Texas was trying to criminalize being gay. And the court was like, nah, you can't do that. The Supreme Court held in that case that criminalizing sodomy violates a constitutional right to privacy, even though it is not explicit in the Constitution. The court said it was based on the notions of personal autonomy to define one's own relationships and American traditions of non-interference with private sexual decisions between consenting adults. So that's one example. The second one is the case of Obergefell versus Hodges. Again, this was decided post Roe and Casey, and actually as recently as 2015. And you may not know it by this name, but this was the case that made same-sex marriage legal on a federal level. And they said liberty includes the right to same-sex marriage, and this is a right protected by the Due Process Clause and Equal Protection Clauses of the 14th Amendment. So basically, the idea here is that if you were to overturn Roe and Casey based on that idea, because it's not in the Constitution specifically, that would put at risk so many other rights, including, you know, the right to basically be gay and be happy, and the right to marry whomever you please. And I don't think that there can be an argument made here that that doesn't put these other rights at risk. So even if you're okay with fucking with women's rights, you know, this is putting a lot of other people at risk too. And to say that, to argue that a state wouldn't ultimately start to file suit about these other cases is just naive. And if you really think that this wouldn't start happening, that's just to me, you don't understand how law works in our country. And it's just a really important thing to note that by making a decision based on that notion that this isn't in the Constitution and therefore we should let the states decide, it's a slippery slope. And it just puts a lot of other, it exposes a lot of other people and puts a lot of other people at risk in our country to losing rights. So now we're going to talk about this idea of the court remaining neutral on this issue. And the argument is that the court remaining neutral means that they're not saying, hey, I'm for abortion, I'm not for abortion. It's basically they're saying we're taking ourselves out of this and we're letting the states decide. Now, the idea of court neutrality in this instance and in discussing this issue of abortion is non-existent, because there is no neutrality when you know that when this case is overturned, or if this case is overturned, you know exactly what will happen. And what will happen is that half of our country's population would have their liberty infringed upon. It would only serve to cause immeasurable harm to women in ways that I'm not getting into now. But in a situation like this, I personally feel that the court has an obligation to protect the rights of all of its citizens, and this includes women. And in case some of you forgot, this is not just a case about abortion. This is a case about women's rights. And I just think that that's really important to say. And again, the court cannot remain neutral in this situation. It is impossible. And by saying we're going to let the states decide, that's not neutral. That's picking a side. And I just think that that's an important point. So with that being said, we're pretty much going to wrap up our discussion on this for now, because there's a whole lot of other stuff I could go into, but I'm not going to, because it gets way too complicated. But those are basically the main arguments. I truly think that the stare decisis analysis is going to be the most important. And I think that's going to be the most legally important. I think that the most convincing argument is the way that this will affect women's position in our society, and the way that Roe has beneficially affected women in our society. And I don't think it can be argued otherwise. So just a few points I wanted to make. I thought it was interesting that the state, that Mississippi decided to have a male attorney argue their case. I don't know. I just thought that that was interesting. Part of me feels like, just from like a tactical standpoint, you may have wanted to have a female arguing it because it may seem less obnoxious, if you will. But with that being said, I have to say that, wow, I was so impressed with I forget her name, Rickleman. She was fucking awesome. And I don't say this to like make fun of the other attorney on the side of Dobbs here. Listen, do I think I could argue concisely before the Supreme Court justices? No, I think I would be like crying basically, but it's a very nerve-wracking situation. But this woman kicked ass. She was so clear, so concise. She had her arguments down, legal arguments, like just so on fucking point. I thought it was really great. And I'm not saying the attorney for Dobbs did a bad job. He didn't do a bad job, but he just was nowhere near as on point as she was. He wasn't able to articulate his points as well as she was, and I was very impressed with her. Also, I just want to say that I have some questions about why the court even decided to hear this case, so I guess we'll find that out when they come out with their opinion, but it does make me a little nervous about what's going to happen, because I don't know why they would decide to rehear a case that is clearly already decided by precedent if they weren't going to decide to change something. But that's just my opinion on it. And I have no other basis to say that than that's just what I'm thinking. But we'll see what happens. And I know that I said I was going to include my own opinion in this, but it's already been too long, and I'm going to make it a separate episode. So if you want to hear me get really into my own feelings on this issue, that'll be in the next one. But until then, don't forget to like and subscribe. I keep forgetting to say that. Like and subscribe, rate me a review, tell me I'm awesome, tell me I suck, whatever. I could take it. But don't forget to follow the podcast on social media at LD Blonde Pod on Twitter and Legally Dirty Blonde Pod on the gram. And until my next episode, where I will be lovingly ranting at you guys, remember, legally, dirty blondes have more fun.